I'm Gab.
He's Jules.
It's gray skies over West London as we record this on a Monday morning. Gray skies over much of Portugal, too. What happened last night, we'll be talking about that later. We'll be talking a lot of stuff happened in the playoffs. Obviously, so much going on with your friends, the Dutch. Yeah. You're wondering why I'm not going to dwell on Italy after too much.
Because you're too scared.
It's the recording times, Jules. It's the recording times. But let's start with this because... So Portugal are facing Serbia.
Yeah.
A draw. We'll see them through. They're at home. Cristiano's there. Bernardo's there. Ruben Dias is there. They get the early goal. Renato Sanchez. Okay. Serbia are a good side. But, you know, even them making some changes, Mitrovic on the bench. And then what happened?
And then this is a team that has no certainties. They don't know really, they don't have an identity. They're not a defensive side. They're not an attacking side either. They don't have much when they play. They don't have much of the ball. I mean, they were beaten in possession by Serbia. And the game was in Portugal with pretty much, apart from Pepe, who was suspended, as you said, all their players fit or almost fit. A very talented squad. And yet they can't get more of the ball than Serbia, who play away from home. For me, Fernando Santos is the first responsible for it, the first one to blame. He should not be in this position. He should have gone a long time ago, probably even after 2016, because he's just not good enough. You can't have those players and play so poorly, so badly, with no direction, no structure, nothing. I mean, Renato was maybe the best player in that team because he's just capable of doing those runs on his own with the ball, but collectively there was nothing. The fullbacks, João Cancelo is one of the best fullbacks in the world, and in that team, he looked like the shadow of himself. He looks like his nanny's playing.
We're going to get into this a little bit more, but you know, you say it's not an attacking team, it's not a defensive team.
I would argue
this is an attacking team based on the talent that is there, based on the players that is there, based on the way that they should play. When you look at the attacking talents, when you look at, obviously, the fullbacks that they have, this is a team that should be playing like Spain. They should be taking the opposition. But then you've got a manager who naturally is a much more conservative guy, and thinks safety first. I mean, Jules, they took that lead and they retreated. They invited Serbia forward. And I want to give Serbia a lot of credit. Serbia have some very, very talented players. I also don't want to come back to the absolute mental mistake of the goal. And this is what happens when you're a team. And please, go on YouTube. I'm sure you can find it. This is what happens, I think, when you're not of the mindset where you're comfortable sitting back and defending, when it's not your thing. You know, we've seen teams in the past, I mean, Italy, the stereotype of this, so they're happy, ha, ha, ha. We just sit back and like, oh, go on. Now, you know, come at us. The way they lose, they don't just lose Mitrovic on the far post. They lose. Lukic is behind him. He's waving his arms. You know what he looked like? You know what, like, at gas stations or used car places? They have those things where there's the, like, they look like balloons, or they look like people with arms, and they're pumping up about hot air. Do you know what I'm talking about? And they wave their arms around.
Yeah.
Lukic, there's two of them. If Mitrovic misses the ball, Lukic gets it and scores. I don't understand how that happens so late in a game. That is a complete mental breakdown.
And it is. They went to a back five because they were scared. I mean, everything, the substitution that he did, that he made, how Diogo Jota played so long, 83 minutes, when he was terrible from start to finish. It's not even like he had good moments. Bernardo, after the game on Portuguese TV, saying there was not even a spell of 10 minutes where we were better than them.
No.
It's like Serbia literally dominated them for the whole game. I mean, come on.
Obviously, elephant in the room, because we can't talk about Portugal without talking about Cristiano. You know, inevitably, there's going to be the sense. Is this, obviously, they still have to go through the playoffs, where, by the way, Cancelo will be suspended for the playoffs, and somebody
for the
else.
Semifinal, for the first game.
Is this a game where we expect Cristiano to do more, just because I don't think he was on his game. I don't think he had a great game. I don't think he had the support. I think Cristiano needs players around him, right, to be effective. Either that or somebody who is a real speedster and a real threat if you're going to play on the counter. He had neither of those. He lined up initially on the right wing with Diogo Jota through the middle. I mean, I almost felt like, oh, look, he's popped up late so many times, he'll do it again. And he did have a chance late with when I think it was João Félix who came on and set him up. Is this kind of unfair to Cristiano?
It's just the expectations are so high. You know, it was the same against Ireland where he had that header wide, but no service whatsoever. He was too isolated. And again, we go back to Santos. Of course, you can say Cristiano could be the problem at his age. He doesn't run as much as he used to. All of that, okay, but still, he's an incredible player and finisher. It's down to the manager to make sure that he gets the service, the crosses, the chances. But that setup was wrong from the beginning.
Here's the uncomfortable question, though. We always assume Cristiano, because he's so important to the team, and because he was effectively coaching them in the final year of 2016, would Cristiano have the clout to go to Fernando Santos and say, listen, this is how we need to play, this is what we need to do, this is the approach that we need to take?
I would think so, but I don't know the relationship they have. I don't know if Santos' message still goes through the dressing room, what Jose Font think, what Pepe think, you know, those big players, experienced player, you know, think of what he's saying. Because they might just say, you know what, you're talking rubbish here. They might not agree with what he wants them to do, the way he sets them up, all of that. This is a big issue that Santos is still in charge.
I think there has to be a hierarchy. There has to be a coach who's in charge. But equally, if you have Cristiano at this stage of his career, you have to have the intelligence and the humility, and I always assumed he kind of did, to allow Cristiano to dictate the approach.
Yeah.
Because Cristiano's a one-off, right?
I agree with you. But for all the coaches, the great coaches that Portugal is producing, to have still Santos in charge.
It is extraordinary.
Mishmash. And by the way, I predicted Serbia to go through and to win. So come on.
Yeah.
Crystal ball here.
It's that special French-Serb connection. Yeah. Jules, let's stick with this concept because it is one of the archetypes of football, right? Do you come up with a system that's and then find players to fit it, or do you look at your group of players and then do it the other way around and find a system that suits the players? Fernando Santos, obviously, he delivered a major trophy for Portugal. And that is huge.
That's the only reason why he's still there, by the way. You know that. If he lost in the final against France or in the semi-final, he would not be in charge anymore. He would not be coaching that team.
No, I agree with you. I do think that, if I had to make a parallel, funnily enough, you're wearing a France 98 shirt.
Yeah.
I do think the parallel is with Didier Deschamps, in the sense that Fernando Santos is a man manager, a good man manager, who, you know, you look back at that Portugal team in 2016, that was not a good Portugal team where the parts fit together well, relative to later ones in terms of talent and whatever.
Completely.
And I think he did a tremendous job. He had, you know, Cristiano, who was clearly not fit in that tournament, still pulled his weight. I'm just wondering if we're seeing at national team level, with some exceptions, you can't, maybe I'm just torn on this. Like, do you want a man manager? I think at a tournament, you want a man manager.
Yeah.
But, because the players are all together for a month or whatever. But equally, I just wonder if over time you want somebody who has more of a tactical identity, more tactical convictions. You know, you're talking about all the great Portuguese managers out there. Obviously, well, I don't know if you're thinking of Amorim or Paulo Fonseca.
Yeah, exactly.
Or we haven't mentioned Mourinho. I think we should mention Mourinho, because otherwise the Mourinho-holics will come out of the woodwork.
Yeah.
Why is Fernando Santos not? It's weird, right?
Because he seems... Yogi Love, the parallel more is, for me, is with Yogi Love, in the sense that you stay too long and you stick to your position. Even after the game yesterday, he said, I know I can still take this team to the Qatar. Okay, maybe you win your playoff because you have two games that they win a ball or Cristiano scores and you go to Qatar. That's not the answer. Going to Qatar won't be the answer. What happens there? You get knocked out in the last 16 or in the group stage and you're being lucky because you've got two draws and a defeat or whatever. This is not the direction that this team should be going anyway. I just think that he's been there too long because of 2016, because he won that tournament, because those people, and maybe Deschamps will get there at some point or others, believe in the end that they've got so much Blinkers, is that what you say? On their own ability to take a squad forward or change their way, the way they are managing, that this is such a complete different squad to 2016, that what you did in 2016, either you reinvent yourself and you're capable of doing it and you've got enough talent, or you don't and you just say, you know what, the way I want my team to play is not suited to this group of players, and that's fine. And then they go and get someone who's more suited to play with, you know, finding a way of playing with Jota, Bernardo, Bruno Fernandes, Cristiano, Andre Silva, whoever you want for such a talented squad. But Fernando Santos is not the answer. He's not the right guy for this squad. And yeah, maybe they will still go to Qatar, but to do what? They're not going anywhere with him.
It's funny because I feel that, you know, if you look at the national sides that are doing well, going back to the question before about the man manager versus the system coach or the identity coach, if you will. If you look at the best sides in the world, obviously Belgium have a strong identity. Again,
yeah.
Roberto gets other things wrong.
Yeah,
let's
yeah,
not forget, right? I mean, I'm not just phrasing
course.
Them, right? Spain obviously have a very, very strong identity. Italy, still the European champions for now, have a strong tactical identity. Brazil have a really strong tactical identity under Chiche, who also happens to be a tremendous man manager, by the way.
Even Argentina found a way that suits for them. No, but it's more balanced.
Germany
it's more solid.
Have one.
Germany now with Flick. Even Deschamps is trying different things.
He would not have done it before.
Gab, I promise you. So
what, the back three?
Even trying before, he would have kept the same thing. But even him, the most conservative maybe of them all, is trying to evolve. He might not succeed and we might be out in the group stage in the World Cup. That's not that's the point. But at least he's trying. Santos is not even trying. He's not even trying.
I think he is trying. He's just
I'm not
trying
sure he's
to,
trying.
I don't... He doesn't give the impression, and that brings us back, though, to the senior players, the leaders in this team. Obviously, Pepe, Cristiano Ronaldo, Josephine. I'm just wondering what is going through Cristiano's head, because I don't think anybody can doubt how important the Portuguese national team is. And I was thinking back through his career, right? We often have these ideas of superstars trying to influence coaches, and they're so important and whatever. For all the criticism that's been leveled at Cristiano over the years, prima donna thing and whatever, he actually really hasn't, maybe it's because he hasn't had to, but he really hasn't, I can't think of many occasions where he's kind of pressured the manager to go and operate a certain way that suited him. And maybe it's also not a coincidence that there's been few situations where he's actually fallen out with managers. He fell out, obviously, with Jose Mourinho, as we know. Now, but if you think back through the years, right, all the guys that Juve had, the three managers that he worked with, to different degrees, they asked him to do different things, they catered to him, but he never said, no, this isn't working, let's go and, you know, play him, dot him, and or whatever. You know, like, these things don't happen in the open, but these stories do come out, right?
Yeah, yeah.
We know, for example, that Messi at Barcelona, and again, I'm not making a value judgment, they do it because for the good of the team, they don't do it because they're egomaniacs, you know, obviously tried to... You know, he insisted on Suarez and so on. I'm wondering if actually Cristiano kind of is treated a bit unfairly. We see him. I mean, I wonder if at United, if Cristiano had marched into Solskjaer's office and, you know, said, like, hey, give me a couple slaps around the head. Hey, Ole, right? Don't put me out. Don't make me play at center forward on my own. Don't put me out on the wing. Let's do this. Let's do that. Let's, you know. It's interesting, though, that he kind of is still respectful, seems to be respectful of that role. Should he be?
Should
he be at that stage
of
his career?
The question, but would Pepe still be in that team if he was another manager for Portugal? Cristiano, I don't think the debate is so much there because he's still Cristiano and he's still amazing.
No, but what I'm saying is, should Cristiano, or are you surprised that Cristiano doesn't try to influence the selection and the tactics more?
I don't know. Maybe this is not what he does. Maybe, Michel Platini used to famously be like, okay, come here. This is how we're going to play. Because I think he had that sort of mindset and kind of the way his brains was working. And Cristiano, in a way, I like that. Because even if you're Cristiano or Messi, maybe that's not your role. Maybe it's not your position. I don't know. But then when you hit problems like Portugal have right now, maybe that's where you should step in and say, okay, listen, let's have a meeting here with Santos and three or four of the key players or senior players in that Portuguese squad and said, okay, what do we do now? Because this is not working. Let's all find a way together. Maybe they've had that kind of meetings. Maybe they haven't. Maybe Cristiano doesn't feel like that's his place. I don't know. I would love to know, like today at training.
What does Cristiano actually think?
Well, you know, they probably all went back to the clubs now. But like, yeah, what's going on and what happened between the two games, between Ireland and Serbia? What did they work on? What did they talk about? Because I'm sure they would have a lot of team meetings with the whole squad, with little groups. Maybe just Cristiano and Santos. Maybe just Pepe, Cristiano and Santos. We saw Luis Figo in the stand with Pepe on Sunday night. Maybe Figo is involved and maybe Figo should say something. You know, I don't know.
With all my love for Luis Figo, right, legendary footballer, I love the whole power winger thing. Other than hair products, at this stage, what's he going to talk about?
I don't know, but maybe he has a good idea. Maybe they're in this position because Santos is not listening to people. Maybe he's not listening to advice. Maybe he still wants to do his own thing, and we go back to blinkers. I promise you, I think when you're in the job for 8 years, 10 years, 12 years, look at Tavares at Uruguay. To a certain extent, he's still doing the same thing, and right now it's not working. And they might miss out on the World Cup. Even with an aging squad, for Uruguay, you can't miss out on the World Cup. I'm sorry. And I do think
Don't
that when you've been in the job...
Man.
I know, we love him.
3 million people in
of
Uruguay.
Of course we
Come
love
on,
him.
Man.
I know we love him, but
they
still,
have many stars on their shirts as your people
yeah,
do. Okay,
they also count the Olympic as they want. But anyway.
No, they don't. No. Two World Cups.
Yeah,
1930, 1950.
Of course.
Respect.
But my point still stands. And I think when you've been in this job for too long, you stay on your ideas and your positions, and I just don't think it's good. I think it's counterproductive.
It's like Serbia, because this is a really gifted team. I go back to my thing about, you know, it's been one of those mysteries, like, after the breakup of the former Yugoslavia, like, man, if they were all still together,
I know,
how ridiculously good would they be?
Incredible.
Not just in football, but in basketball,
yeah,
too,
yeah,
obviously.
Everywhere.
That's the original one,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, but, of course.
I looked at it, and after Renato Sanchez's goal, Stankovic on the bench, Dickie just goes, he just loses it. I thought he could have been sent off.
Yeah.
I think he was booked instead. He saw a foul, Bernardo Silva foul. And then, though, the players on the pitch, and we've seen Serbia kind of lose their marbles in the past, but no, they pushed on. There's a lot of talents there.
They're so good.
Tadic, Vlahovic.
Yeah.
They can do something.
I think they can do. And I know they went to the last two World Cups and went out in the group stage and okay. But the way they've played and the setup, and you know, Dragan Stojkovic was one of my idols when I was growing up. And then he signed for Marseille and I hated him ever since. But I remember him in the Panini 1990 with Yugoslavia, by the way. Sticker album. It was great. And then the whole Marseille ruined it for me. But anyway... And for him to come in March, not in a great situation, and I think he's won 8 games in a row,
really?
Or something like that, it's been pretty special. But he played with a back five and then a back four. You know the old cliche, say, like, don't throw all your strikers in. Well, so Vlahovic started, then Mitrovic at halftime, then Luka Jovic with 10 minutes to go. And they did win the game in the end. But I just
think you had nothing to lose with 10 minutes to go.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
And but they've got so many options to do. You can play Kostic as a left wing back, but you can play him as a left winger. Tadic can pretty much play anywhere you want and will still be very effective.
Yeah.
And Tadic is amazing at his age, and the time, the period that he's going through now is maybe the best football he's ever played. You've got Milinkovic-Savic in midfield. You've got strong defenders who are really solid. I just think it's a great squad, and I really hope he finds the right formula to make them do something interesting at the World Cup. Because had it been a draw, you would not have played them, Serbia, in the playoff game, semi-final or final for your team, because they are so good.
No, classic team that I think everybody wants to avoid.
Do you think Portugal will make it? We don't know yet the seeding for the playoffs in Europe, and so they
yeah,
can have a tough draw,
people,
an easy draw, whatever.
Let's remind people how it works, because there's going to be 12 teams in the playoffs.
Yeah.
It's the 10 teams that finish second in their groups.
Yeah.
Correct me if I'm wrong.
And then
the two highest ranked teams from the Nations League who haven't already qualified.
Yeah.
On Thursday, we'll come back and tell you who everybody is, because we'll know who's entering the pot.
Then.
And then they'll be split 6 and 6. You're going to have 6 seeded teams, 6 unseeded teams. And then you're going to essentially have Final Fours.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
Because there's three final. Spots at stake.
Yeah.
Semi-final, final, but not home and away.
No, just one leg.
Is that fair?
Is it because you just can't feel another game? Is that why? Is that the reason?
I think part of it is, yeah, you can't cram more games into the schedule. But what it means is there's no margin of error, I think, for anybody. I think much as the old formula with the home and away, you know, if you're a bigger team, the fact that you get two bites at the cherry, and I say this as somebody, of course, whose team missed the last World Cup.
To Sweden, yeah.
Thank you, against Sweden. you know, you do have a margin for error. You can fix things. You can, it's 90 minutes on the night, and you're out. And also, I think I'm right in saying that the seeded teams play at home first, but then the final is a draw, right?
I think so. But so, even the seeded team who already have an advantage in the draw, you could have had the unseeded team playing that game at home, which would have made it even better, I think.
Yes, better for you who's already qualified. No, it's like, oh, let me get my popcorn.
No, you know, when Italy face Sweden again in the playoffs.
Not fun. No. I don't need to see Sweden again. Sorry. No. I'd love them. I'd love it if they made the World Cup. Yeah. I'd love Ibra at a World Cup. Yeah, I love that. Hey, so, like, yeah, please don't come into our
path. I was kidding.
Hopefully, we won't need it.
No,
I play in a few hours.
Exactly.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Portugal. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's go, Gab.
Spain clinched first place in their group after beating Sweden thanks to a late goal by the much maligned Alvaro Morata. Jules, big sigh of relief for our boy Luis Enrique.
Big sigh of relief. It was, I think, a typical Spain performance in the sense that they had 1,000% possession of the ball, one shot on target, I think, the goal. I guess the shot before the goal too.
In like minute 85.
Minute 85 as well. If Forsberg had taken one of his chances for Sweden, the game might have opened up a bit more in Spain, but I guess they tried to control. For me, the biggest thing that we learn, and it's nothing new really, but how Gavi, again, I thought was amazing. And in such a high-pressure game, because there was pressure, even if they were at home, for him to play the way he did was just like, wow, I don't know what's next and what's coming. He's only 17, but it's just crazy, I think.
It was remarkable.
So much maturity.
You know, you talk about maturity and experience, and I always wonder, the people who made mistakes in this game, defensively, we saw Azpilicueta make a mistake. We saw Laporte was kind of all over the place. And then here's a 17-year-old kid, and he's not putting a foot wrong. Remarkable.
Yeah, it was crazy. So Sweden needed to win in Spain to qualify, but had they beaten Georgia, Gab, last week in the previous game, a draw would have been enough for them, but yet they bottled it. Did Sweden coach Jan Henderson get this one wrong? Especially we thought Ibra maybe would be on the bench for Georgia and then start against Spain or something like that. But in the end, he started against Georgia, and him and his act didn't really hit it up, and they ended up drawing that game that cost them.
Look, I appreciate Captain Hindsight. I like to play Captain Hindsight all the time. However, look, he played the percentages. I think it makes more sense, right? Where am I more likely to get the 3 points, or where am I more likely to get the draw? I know Ibra probably can't play 180 minutes.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, over two games so close. He is 40 years old. So I put my eggs in the Georgia basket, and they screwed that one up. They lost 2-0 to a team that really you need to be. And obviously, had they done that, the layout would have been completely different for this game. And I think his plan would do that. And then against Spain, I set up more defensively. Spain has to come at me.
Yeah.
You know, I hit them with Isak, and then late in the game, I scare them with Ibra. I think it's as simple as that. I don't think bringing Ibra on sooner in the game would have necessarily changed this, you know.
And if you haven't seen that Georgia-Sweden game, Georgia scored two goals from their very young winger, Kvaratskhelia, who is 20 and an amazing talent, so remember the name.
Kvaratskhelia.
Yeah, it's not easy to say, but still remember the name.
Jules, Group G is going down to the wire on Tuesday night. Let me set it up for you.
Yeah.
Holland are on 20 points.
Oh,
Turkey
yeah.
and Norway are on 18. Norway are away to Holland in Rotterdam. Turkey are away to Montenegro. Holland could be out of the World Cup by Wednesday morning. And yeah, it's because they let a two-goal lead slip against Montenegro, conceding twice in the last 8 minutes.
Yeah.
How much faith do you have in Louis van Gaal?
I think they'll do it, but and what, where I recognize myself is that who are the two countries the most arrogant in football? The French and the Dutch. And that second half against Montenegro is the Dutch, like the French against Switzerland at the Euros, thinking like, we've got this. It's easy, we've got this. We've walked through the first half, they were 2-0 up, or the first hour, let's say. Like the French coming back against Switzerland at the Euros and being 3-1 up and saying, we've got this, it's cool. And then poor defending from Van Dijk, from Daley Blind.
Daley Blind, especially.
He doesn't even jump on the second goal.
I don't know if he's expecting. I don't know.
The foul, maybe
thinking.
You think, or what?
But you still jump, right? You think, oh,
yeah,
no.
Yeah, yeah.
You feel like, oh, look, let me just stand here just in case he jumps on top of me and the referee. You still have to contest
crazy.
The header.
I gotta say,
Daley Blind is extremely likable. His dad was extremely likable,
yeah,
whatever
We like the family a lot.
But you got to ask serious questions after. I mean, he's going to be the first one to be absolutely crushed if this screws him up.
Yeah.
But that is a horror. Any other player makes a mistake, we'd be crucifying him right now.
Yeah. And to be fair, Gab, it could have been even worse for the Dutch if Norway hadn't screwed things up. They failed to beat Latvia at home, only drawing 0-0. No Erling Haaland, but that was a must-win game and the only solace left in captivity.
Yeah. You still had Soloth. You still had your boy Martin Ødegaard, who now can't even get into the Arsenal lineup. So he's well rested.
It was fresh.
A million shots on goal. Yeah. I think 25 shots, something like that. Yeah, this really hurt. Now they still control their destiny, which is weird. But you know, it's an interesting situation to be in. How many? You know, it's like blunders galore in this group.
Crazy.
Turkey, gobble gobble, are guaranteed at least a spot in the playoffs as long as they beat Montenegro away, which we find out isn't a given.
Yeah, we saw.
Jules, they have to get this right.
Yeah, they have to get this right. Go for it. They won 6-0 against Gibraltar, which was good, but it was easy. You expected them to. But at least they would have a bit of momentum. And certainly, from a position where they thought maybe they were out of it completely, now they're back in, and you have to believe in it because at least it's a playoff spot for you. And that would be good. Kickoff is in a few hours as we record this, Gab, which is why we're not spending too much on it. But Italy may be going to the playoff. It's all because Jorginho missed penalties in the game against Switzerland, in the two games, actually, against Switzerland.
Yeah, that's right. And look, people are going to debate this endlessly. Is he good? A good penalty taker? Is he a bad one? I think he's a very good penalty taker. He's already hit 3 penalties this year for Chelsea, but you know, obviously he's missed those 2 high-profile ones.
Yeah.
People say he missed one in the final against England. I thought he hit that one almost perfectly. Had it been perfect, it would have gone in. What's interesting is it obviously playing on his head now, and I think Mancini has a huge call to make. A big call to make to see, does he take another one? Because footballers are superstitious, right?
Very much so.
The analyst in me, the rational person in me, says, no, well, who cares? Just let him take it again, right? Let him take it. He missed one against Switzerland. He'll view this as a redemption. As we saw, he took a horrendous one.
Yeah.
He changed his penalty technique.
Yeah, the run to it, the running.
There's no little jump at the end. I don't know what's going on in his mind. I think you just have to put your trust in people and, you know, and judge whether he's mentally there or not.
Italy going to Northern Ireland. Remember the last time they went to Northern Ireland?
No, it wasn't alive in 1958. I don't need to talk about it.
Hey, go on, Italy.
Kylian Mbappe scores 4 goals as France obliterate Kazakhstan 8-0.
Yes, that was good. I mean, I know Kazakhstan are really bad. Okay, let's be clear here. But yeah, for Kylian to score 4 goals, the first French player at international level to score quadruple since Just Fontaine in the 1958 World Cup.
It's not setting the bar high or anything.
No, but they were good. Deschamps the most conservative manager, as we explained before, went for Kingsley Coman as right wing back, which was like, what? He must have woken up sweating. Deschamps like, no, I can't do this tonight. I can't. But he did. And
the Coman Hernandez brothers on the other flank.
Exactly. I mean, let's wait to see Coman against a real team that actually attacks to see if he can play that position. But that was great. Well done to France. They qualify on what was the sixth anniversary, sadly, of the Paris attacks, where, you know, Antoine Griezmann's sister, for example, was involved. She was at the Bataclan that night. So a very emotional night as well for France. England also kick off in a few hours against San Marino, but bearing a cataclysm, they will automatically qualify. Gab, let me ask you then about the story that dominated the media over the weekend, the Harry Maguire celebration in the 5-0 win over Albania. He has upset a few pundits, hasn't he? With like his hand behind his ear.
Yeah, and
like,
then later putting his fingers in his ears.
Silence
like
the critics because I'm rubbish with United, but hey, I score a goal against
Albania.
A bad team. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Look, I think there's a basic thing here. It doesn't offend me personally. You know, I'm not like Roy Keane who says, oh, he's embarrassed, you have another United captain. But just read the room. This isn't
exactly
helpful, right? You came out, oh, I didn't mean anything by the... But by the celebration.
The explanation is worse, even.
The explanation, just shut up. Just say, like, it seemed like a good idea at the time. I done screwed up. Don't worry. I'll come back. I'll work harder for it. It's just such a, why give people other stuff to talk about?
Know,
this is what I don't understand.
Exactly.
It's just so counterproductive.
Yeah.
And you almost wonder, I'm going to do some foreshadowing here for those who listen to Gavin Jewell's podcast. United could benefit from a CEO of media, I think.
Yeah.
But more of that later.
Yeah.
It was overshadowed by the Maguire business, but Harry Kane did score a hat-trick and is now fourth all-time alongside the legendary Jimmy Greaves in the list of England international goal scorers. He is 44. First place belongs to Wayne Rooney. He's got 53. After him, you got Bobby Charlton, Gary Lineker. He's a good company.
Yeah, yeah.
Kane is 28, Jules. He's going to break the record.
Yes, he will.
Yep. And do you have any clever theories as to why he scored as many goals for England this season as he has for Tottenham in the Premier League and Europa Conference combined?
I don't know. Easier games, maybe, slightly.
What, against Moura in the Europa Conference?
Vitesse, yeah. I don't know. I think he's great for his confidence, and I think Antonio Conte must have been like, hey, yeah, this is good for me if he comes back with a hat-trick against Albania, 5 goals against San Marino. No, he's not going to play right now. I'm just telling you right now. But yeah, I think it's good for the confidence and the momentum. A goal by Angel Di Maria gives Argentina a 1-0 win against Uruguay as Leo Messi makes his return for the last 15 minutes. Gab, they have Brazil next on Tuesday. They virtually qualify. Should Messi play that game? Leonardo is stressing. I can tell you that.
Well, I'm glad you're asking me because I can be impartial on this one. If I'm Paris Saint-Germain, I say absolutely not. You missed the last games through injury.
Please.
I know that it's Brazil and it's important and it's a big deal and everything. I know we put in your contract, you could go. But guess what? They don't need you.
Exactly.
Come on as a sub. Run around for 10 minutes if you want to. If you're Scaloni, hey, how about I try a solution that doesn't involve Messi?
Just in case one day he's suspended or injured, you know?
Or one day he retires, which might actually happen.
True.
You know the most incredible thing? Argentina are on this ridiculously long unbeaten streak.
Yeah.
And you would never expect that.
I know.
Speaking of Brazil, they beat Colombia 1-0 thanks to a late strike from your boy, Lucas Paqueta.
Yeah, El Paquete. Well.
They've taken 34 of a possible 36 points in 12 games. Simple question, are they the best team in the world right
they
now?
They are not the best one. They are amongst the best ones with France.
Have to play Colombia, which is a serious team. You play Kazakhstan.
Oh,
right? Okay, all right.
Okay, here we go. But they're amongst the best. Germany beats up Armenia 4-1 away as Hansi Flick mixes up his lineup with the likes of Jonathan Tah, Jonas Hoffmann, Florian Neuhaus, David Raum, all of those. But Gab, you want to talk about Leroy Sané.
The
new Leroy Sané.
The new, well, first of all, as far as Germany, his hand was a bit forced, obviously, with all the COVID cases and self-isolation. Yeah. And obviously the game was irrelevant. But yeah, I got to praise Leroy Sané because I was very hard on him last season he came back to Bayern.
Yeah.
I thought he was really inconsistent and stuff. This is a guy whose career, people forget how good he was at Schalke, how good it was in his first season at Manchester City. And then he just seemed to go off the boil.
Yeah.
He's only 25 years old.
He's still
young. He can go back. He can become the best winger in the world.
Yeah.
Arguably again. But he's got all the tools to do that. I think he's just in a really good spot right now.
Yeah.
A late own goal gives Croatia a 1-0 win over Russia on an awful, water-drenched pitch. It means Luka Modric will be going to the World Cup while the Russians will need to go to the playoffs. Jules, this was a bit heartbreaking if you're of a Russian persuasion.
I know, but
Artem Zuba, I'm sure, was
if
sad.
If you haven't seen this game, but Zuba and Kapi don't get on. The pitch was waterlogged because of the crazy rain that was falling on Split. But Russia did nothing anyway. I think Smolov completed one pass. He played for 60 minutes or something. One pass. Who does one pass? Like, I mean, this is crazy. And I thought Croatia were the better team considering the context. But I've been the better team in that group anyway. So well done to them. Russia can still qualify through the playoff. They might still do it. Karpin might still do it. But on that game, it's hard to judge, isn't it, when you can't actually, the ball can't even run on the pitch.
Yeah, I mean, look, this was old school.
The Premier League have revealed the calendar for the 2022-2023 season, Gab. There will be a 7-week break because of the World Cup in Qatar, of course, and players who reach the final will get just 8 days off before coming back to play in the Premier League on December 26th, Boxing Day, Gab. Many are angry about this. There's also a very short time prior to the World Cup for national team coaches to have their players. Can you see why people are not happy with this schedule? And is there another way anyway?
Okay, first of all, there is no other way unless you want to play in summer, in which case people would be even less happy. And if you want to go back and bring it all to the fact that bribery allegations to the World Cup, I'm totally with you. We all know that. Yep. That was a long time ago. Now, kind of, you're stuck, right? But what annoys me is when they say, oh, look, all these players will only have 8 days, and then they come back, and they have to travel back, and they have to play on December 26th, blah, blah, blah. Yo, nobody's forcing the Premier League to resume play on Boxing Day, right? They do it because it's part of their tradition. And all these people like, oh, UEFA and FIFA, they don't care about player welfare, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, sorry, who doesn't care about player welfare? Who makes them play 3 games in the space of 5 days over the New Year's program? So please, don't bring this up. This is purely about money, right? December 26th is a hugely lucrative day in England. And it's a great day because everybody plays and stuff and the holidays and whatever you go out. That's as simple as that. Like, honestly, you don't need to use every single situation to go and score points. Or if you're going to do that, come up with an alternate solution. Yeah. What is your alternate solution? What, do you want the Premier League you want the European leagues to stop earlier? You want to do that? And I'll tell you what, if England go out in the group stage, a lot of your guys won't have to worry about this. No, I mean, I think there's going to be so many knock-on effects to this. Joking aside, right? So many players in the Premier League come from all over the world. The reality is most of these Premier League players will either not be going to the World Cup or will have been eliminated probably by, what, given the finals on the 18th before the quarterfinal phase, many of them?
Yeah.
So this December 26th thing, I don't see how big a deal it is. What it means is the teams that have more internationals who go deep, who've got a quarterfinalist, they might miss people.
That's true.
Hey, how about a nice, wonderful leveling effect? Because there's going to be a lot of people who are going to be sitting around on their backsides for 7 weeks not playing football as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I get a little worked up when people can't see the bigger picture.
Yeah.
An Andre Ayew penalty gives Ghana a 1-0 win over South Africa, which means they advance to the final round of qualifying in Africa. Again, those who don't know, talk about brutal qualifying.
Yeah, that's
They go through a million rounds in Africa, and then in the end, 10 teams, home and away, 5 teams qualify. Anyway, but Jules, the South African Football Association has lodged a formal complaint against the referee, Senegal's Mogeta Enje. Now, there's no VAR in CAF qualifying. This call was, to say the least, controversial. It's on YouTube. I retweeted it.
Controversial is not even it doesn't even come close. I mean, and from what we see, NDI looks like he's got a really good view of the incident, which is on a corner. And from where he's positioned, it looks great. But basically, the Ghanaian player just falls on the floor on his own. He's just in front of the South African defender. But there's you could even see there's no contact on the video on the video of the game. You could see it. And yet, because there's no VAR, which to some extent, Gab, it's either you do it for everyone or you don't do it for anyone. But, you know, if you're South Africa this morning, you feel really harshly done by the fact that they could not put VAR for your games as well, because this is costing you potentially a World Cup participation, which is bad. It's really bad.
It's huge. I mean, I think Ghana are a better side. I'm told South Africa didn't play well, but you still, this is why it exists. It's to avoid these situations. Now, people have come up with weirdo explanations. I mean, based on this like grainy, crappy clip I upload, people are like, oh, look, no, his foot touches the player behind him, or you know, he saw a push.
No way. I watched it so many times again.
Well, you know what? I just want to make clear, when we're talking about Ghana and we're talking about South Africa, right? They have professionals. It's not like it's a guy with a cell phone filming the match. They have professional television production. I know VAR costs money and so on. At the very least, though, you could have something. At least you introduce it at this phase of the competition, the group phase. This is important. I think of all the bad blood that's now going to exist. There's already accusations against this poor fella, Magete Njai. Like maybe he just got it wrong. I mean, it's weird to me because when you see him,
he looks so well.
He's looking straight at it. What are you seeing?
Yeah.
But I don't know. It's awful. And all those people, VAR, the spontaneity, celebrations, blah blah blah. So, come on, man. Come on, man. Like, put yourself in somebody else's shoes.
It's not just retired players, apparently, Gab, who like Arsene Wenger's plan for a biennial World Cup, because Kevin De Bruyne also seemed to like it. He said it's not bad. He gave a big interview to France Football where he explains that I think he sees it from the point of view of what Wenger's been saying. There will be more rest time overall through the season for players if there is that World Cup every 2 years.
Can I make a suggestion? I'm not sold on the biennial World Cup. We've reported it probably won't happen. But Kevin De Bruyne is an intelligent guy who's actually read the whole plan. And as you said, he mentioned there's a mandatory 25-day rest period. That's very important to him. He's somebody who's obviously been really hit hard by injuries, a lack of rest.
He's still probably not fit.
He's also somebody who I think has played more minutes when fit than anybody else.
Yeah.
I value his opinion because he can see the whole aspect. Again, I'm not sure about a World Cup every 2 years, maybe some other kind of tournament. But what about the other parts in the proposals? Those are all the ones everybody conveniently overlooks, especially the clubs and leagues, because they don't want the 25-day mandatory rest period because they want to go around Europe continuing ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching.
On tours,
so,
exactly.
You know, there's a multitude of views there. Gareth Bale has once again angered folks in Spain. He started for Wales in the 5-1 win over Belarus, which means they're going to go to the playoffs. But Jules, he hasn't played for Real Madrid since August.
No.
In fact, he has played 4 games for Wales this season and only 3 for Real Madrid. You're an honorary Welshman. Defend your boy.
Yeah, it was his 100th cap, by the way. So well done, Gareth. 100 caps is very significant. It's been amazing for Wales all through those years, from a young boy to now. What can I say? I mean, clearly, you know, we said for Pogba in the last show that how the national team would have been a breath of fresh air had he not got injured. For Bale, you really feel it, like those moments with the national team are special because of what he's going through, what was happening at Real Madrid when he's either injured or not playing much and all of that.
No. When he says he's injured, because there's not a question, right? Because
he came off at halftime in that game because either he was precautionary or he was not fully fit and he wanted to play because he was the 100th cap. I don't think he would be involved against Belgium for the whole game. He might have, again, a half or an hour because he's clearly not fully fit either. You could see him when he was playing. But I can see why Real Madrid might not be happy and Carlo Ancelotti. I don't know. It could be worse. It could be Aaron Ramsey, who played 7 minutes in between the two international breaks and played all of 90 pretty much.
The thing about Aaron Ramsey, it's a coach's decision.
Yeah.
To not play for Juve. Because I don't think Allegri looks at him and says, like, what is this? You know. But Gareth Bale is a slightly different situation. I'm not saying he would start for Real Madrid.
It's never going to change now.
But he played the first
3
games of the season.
I know, it's not going to change now.
I know, but there is another way around it. And he doesn't seem to care at all about the controversy.
Well, I don't know. Gab, I didn't know who Phil Lynch was until last week. And I'm guessing maybe you didn't know either.
I had no idea.
Apparently, he's Manchester United CEO of media, whatever that means. And he angered many people last week when he revealed the club checks fan sentiment graphs twice a day to guide players' social media narrative. So what, if fans are not happy with Harry Maguire, they show him a lot of love on Man United's social medias?
I don't.
Is that what it means?
I think the way we consume football is changing, and I get the whole social media thing and whatever else. I also get that this dude is completely tone deaf. Because to come out and speak in this way, you know.
Maybe he wanted to be open. You always want transparency, so maybe he gave you transparency.
Okay, this guy's been at the club for several years, right? and nobody knows who the hell he is. Now, all of a sudden, he appears. He gives transparency at a time when United are terrible and under pressure and so on. And he starts talking about fan sentiment graphs and, you know, telling the player's narrative. Listen, I'm sure he takes his job very seriously. He's actually, he's American, used to work for Yahoo. He went to Brown, which is not a university, really. It's just a color. Sorry, just kidding. I have lots of friends who went to Brown. But, you know, you saw how you saw like Gary Neville's reaction, right?
Yes.
Gary Neville's reaction involving the F word in referring to this man. This doesn't help.
No.
I think a big part of social media is that it has to be credible. I'm sure Phil, and by the way, Phil, should we invite him on the podcast?
Of course, come on, Phil.
You know, I think it kind of got a raw deal when you take a little bit of like a 30-second clip out and so on, and everybody makes fun of you. Equally, when you're the social media manager, no, he's not the social media, sorry, he's the head of all media.
CEO
of all media.
Yeah.
People are going to react badly. I'd be really curious to know, like...
I don't know. I want to believe that this was just, like, taken out of context and that he's great at his job and he understands it all and everything.
Well, but...
You seem more skeptical about
it. I don't know. Like I was wondering, too, what are fan sentiment graphs? Like, do they have bots that troll like, Twitter and TikTok and so on and be like, all right, what players are under attack right now, so maybe, you know, we don't put we
show
suggest
love, those, like,
yeah, we show love or like, or like we ask them to keep a low profile for now, or
yeah,
you know, I, I'll tell you what,
some,
like,
of that could be useful, maybe.
Yeah, would be useful if Harry Maguire had a word with Phil Lynch before celebration.
Yeah.
Erik ten Hag is one of those guys permanently linked with moves to other clubs. Jules, he has now once again
pledged
his future to Ajax.
Yeah, on ESPN in the Netherlands, where he explained why he turned down the Newcastle job, that they must have been either offering him or interested in him or something, saying that what he has right now, Ajax is great. It's all good. People at the club are great. The players are great. I love Erik ten Hag. I've got so much time for him. And you know what? Maybe he works only at Ajax because of the kind of manager that he is and because he likes working with young players with a lot of talent, of course, and you put him under more pressure in a bigger league, maybe. That's, I don't know. We might find out one day. But I've got a lot of time for him.
Yeah, and he had a really bumpy start at Ajax. People forget that. You know, the year they went to run the semi-final, the, you know, in October, November, people are like, what the hell is this guy doing?
And even
you
last
know?
Season was not as good as this year either. So,
like, I think... What I don't know is, wait, is it because it's Newcastle and you look at Newcastle and you're like, oh my God, they're in the relegation zone.
Yeah.
I'm not used to relegation battles. Yeah, suppose the owners have all these money, but, you know, what's going on, blah, blah, blah.
So
it's such a pain in the butt to get back up. What are the expectations? You know, would it be different if Barcelona called him? But equally at the same time, I say, you know what? He's been at a big club before, right? He's worked at Bayern. He knows it from the inside. Maybe he doesn't want that kind of... Maybe he's either waiting for that...
Is Newcastle to step up
from Ajax?
Yeah, I don't think so. Even with all the money in the world.
Yeah, I think we both agree that Newcastle aren't going to spend all the money in the
not
world.
Not in one go, that's
for sure. PIF have a lot of money.
Yeah, exactly.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is... Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
In the last show, Gab, on Thursday, we told you all about the homeless charity Shelter and how upset they were that the Premier League didn't allow clubs to wear their away shirts at home on Boxing Day. You've got an update for us.
Yeah. So now I'm starting to believe that all this is being orchestrated by Shelter themselves to get more media attention. Look,
don't be too harsh.
Look, it's a worthy cause. It's a charity for the homeless.
Yeah.
They have this campaign, as we told you last time, that... they want all the Premier League clubs to wear their away kits because, you know, apparently to kind of show like, oh, there is no home for the homeless. That's important on Boxing Day. Premier League says no. I presume the reason they have no is said no is because there's different kits, there's agreements with sponsors and whatever else, and they have to respect that. And so they drip these like stories into the media, and I was at Daily Mail saying that a bunch of clubs would be willing to pay fines to the Premier League to wear their away kits because that's how much they love Shelter, that's how much they believe in this charity. Like Shelter getting more attention now because of this situation, which I think is great because what they
do
is really worthwhile.
They do a great job, as we said.
Equally, this whole thing just seems so stupid to me. Like, really? You're whining about this? Come on, man.
No, come on. There's other ways of...
But look, if mentioning Shelter helps them, I'm continuing. Shelter. Go for it. According to reports, Xavi is ready to raid Chelsea for Hakim Ziyech, Callum Hudson-Odoi, and Christian Pulisic. Jules, did you know you're such a fan of the Premier League and Stamford Bridge in particular?
And also, with what money? Like, are we all putting money in the pot with all the socials around the world and everybody gives £5 and then maybe you can...
Okay.
You're looking at loans now. So maybe look at all the big clubs and the players who don't play much, like a Ziyech, like a Pulisic, who's been injured pretty much all season. And you look and say, okay, maybe we can try to get those on loans for the end of the season, for the second half of the season. Because they can't buy them. I'm not even sure how much of their wages they can pay right now.
So, okay. So, somebody who used to cover the transfer market very, very closely, I can tell you that when you see these stories, when one club is linked with three dudes from the other club...
I know
what
you're going to say, cynically.
Yes, there's an intermediary who's spoken to Chelsea. Chelsea said, oh, well, we have a big squad. Not all these guys play. Might be good. You know, they might want to go somewhere else, whatever. Maybe a loan deal, blah, blah, blah. Guys. Oh, Barcelona. You got prestige. You got a big audience. You have a bunch of injured guys. You don't have any money. Could we work out some kind of loan deal? Chelsea very happy to send players on loan if they don't necessarily fit immediately in Tuchel's plans. I think this is all that's going on here. Look, all three of these people should be playing every week, right?
Yeah.
And I'm sure there's a number at which Barcelona say, well, we can pay this much of their salary. Chelsea, you play the rest. And if you're Chelsea, you say, well, rather than sitting on the bench, playing the League Cup, why not?
The other one that was mentioned was Thiago Alcantara. And right now, if you're Liverpool, why would you loan him out in the first place?
Well, because remember my theory, they're going to get Gini Wijnaldum on loan from Paris Saint-Germain.
Yeah, yeah. Make all sense now. So much sense.
Wouldn't that make sense in Liverpool?
No, it doesn't. Listen, meanwhile, Dani Alves' return to Barcelona is official. Gab, you like this move, don't you? He's going to play 60 games in a season, being amazing at right back.
I love this move. He doesn't have to play right back. He's going to do a better job.
Where is he going to play?
You can play right wing rather than Sergiño Dest, since everybody's injured all the time, right? When you have the emergency situation, when you want to play a back three, which, you know, effectively, if you play with Mingueza, you're effectively playing a back three anyway, right? Look, they don't have any players. They're injured. This guy's available. I'm sure he's not costing them a lot of money.
Yeah, I think he come for free, pretty much, playing for free.
And that's before you get into all the intangibles, what he brings on the pitch, the leadership, all that other stuff. I got no problem with it. I have no problem with it whatsoever. Xavi wants... Xavi gets, as long as we can afford it. Simple as that. Simple as that. Dean Smith is the new Norwich manager. Jules, that was quick. Only a week since he was sacked by Aston Villa.
Really quick. Really, really quick. So, you know, sometimes managers, and we saw Antonio Conte in the summer saying, no, emotionally I was too drained after leaving Inter. I could not go to Spurs back then, and now it was okay. Clearly none of that with Dean Smith. You know, he was ready to go again as soon as he got the call from Christian Pulisic saying, hey, we're sacking you, here's your money, goodbye. So it was clearly, which is good, I guess, if you feel like you can go again. If you're a Norwich fan, are you excited by Dean Smith coming? I think he's a really good manager that could do a really good job building or rebuilding, whatever way you want to put it. Can he save them this season? I still think they lack a bit of talent to stay up. But you don't know.
I think he's an exceptional manager. I do know.
I'm pretty sure
that Norwich are going down. Normally, I would say to someone like Dean Smith, take some time off. Don't come in mid-season. But you know what? I think Norwich are pretty much already down. I could be wrong.
So what? He's coming in now, but this is a bit of a holiday.
It's one of those Scott Parkery type situations where he comes in, he oversees their relegation, he assesses what they have with the club. You know, he has that transition period. He tries out new things. And then they come back and he takes them back up next year. I would assume that's how he's approaching
them. Yeah. And I think he's more suited to do that than Frank Lampard, for example, who...
Doesn't have a lot of experience with relegation struggles.
But certainly to rebuild, assess the situation and all of that. So good luck to him, of course. But what would be interesting is I think There's two more games involving Villa and Norwich, isn't it? Are they playing in the cup maybe or something? And then the second league match or something like that, or maybe the two league matches. So that would be interesting when Dean Smith goes back to Aston Villa or host Aston Villa with his new club.
Yeah.
Always good. Ajax goalkeeper Andre Onana, who hasn't actually played since January after testing positive for a banned substance, will reportedly join Inter as a free agent at the end of the season. Gab, is this a good move for him and for the Nerazzurris?
Yeah, so the stuff with the banned substance obviously was something that
he said it was his wife pill for losing weight or something like Colo Torino, something like that.
Yeah, something similar. It happens all the time. but his ban was reduced from 12 months to 9 months, so theoretically he could be playing now in November, December for Ajax. Yeah. But he turned down the contract. Ajax are probably thinking, all right, see you later, Andre. I think it's a good move for Inter. I think he's a very talented keeper. I don't understand exactly what happened before, his mental state and so on, because he did have some ups and downs.
Yeah,
I mean, he nearly lost his,
yeah, he did a few
even things. Before all this business with the banned substance. You know, he'd lost his space for a while. They went with Stecklenburg. And that said, Inter need a replacement for Handanovic. I know there's a portion of Inter fans who just criticize Handanovic for everything. Others say, look, he's the courageous captain.
He's 55 years old or something.
He's going to move on at some point. I don't think he is what he was. You get him on a free. Onana's young. He's a very, very good goalkeeper. And so I say, why not? Let's go for this. What I do think is amusing is the way, again, these things get reported. The whole time, the messaging from in the Inter sphere was, ooh, is he going to go to Inter? Because Arsenal have such a strong interest in him. Arsenal really want him. I'm like, wait a minute. Arsenal just paid a ton of money for Aaron Ramsdale. He's doing really, really well.
Yeah,
they have Bernd Leno, who they also paid a ton of money for.
Yeah.
He's still there. They got to go and find a home for him. They want to immediately put pressure on Leno by bringing in Onana?
Marotta would read the paper and say, oh no, I need to act quick on Onana because Arsenal are going to come and get him.
Yeah,
Pepe Marotta has been in this job for long enough to know that this is all BS and it doesn't get paid.
If you're going to go and float a story like that, right? Come on, something plausible. I mean, did you get the wrong North London club? Like Lloris is out of contract at the end of the season.
At least get something more credible.
I'm sorry, that is the obvious one. Lloris is out of contract at the end of the season.
Exactly.
Golini's there on loan, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
So you may have a number one situation at Spurs. Why don't you just make up a link to Spurs than Arsenal? Why is it always got to be Arsenal?
Crazy.
We have an update on the attack on Paris Saint-Germain's women's midfielder, Hira Hamraoui. You'll recall she was in a car with her teammate, Aminata Diallo. Masked men approached the car, pulled Hamraoui from the car, beat her with sticks and pipes, I think, on the legs to injure her. Aminata Diallo was actually arrested. There was some suggestion it was that somehow she was involved. She was detained. She's now since been released without charge. And against the backdrop of all this, Paris Saint-Germain had to play against Lyon on Sunday night. Well, what's the latest?
Yeah, the latest, Gabby, is you're right. Diallo was released after 35 hours in custody, most of that time being spent being interviewed and interrogated by the police. I think there's still some suspicion around maybe a role that she could have had or if she knew the people who attacked Hamraoui. But it looks very unlikely now that she had anything to do with it, which means I think a lot of people really feel for her and her family to have gone through hell like that, where your name is dragged into this whole story. If she really had nothing to do with it, they're looking at other possibilities, like a former lover to Hamraoui who wanted revenge, that kind of stuff. But it's crazy, really. And PSG wanted the game against Lyon to be postponed on Sunday night. The French Federation and Lyon, I don't think, wanted to, so the game stayed. They lost 6-1. And you know what I thought?
They hadn't had any time to train. They hadn't trained.
They didn't train. They were still on the shock, the whole squad. Obviously, Diallo, Hamraoui was not there. Kashraoui, who was also in the car that night, wasn't there too. It was crazy, I think, for them even to play. The girls didn't want to play that game. They should have forfeited it, not even traveled to Lyon, focused on the next game in the Champions League and not be involved in that, which you knew they were going to get battered. Lyon were up for it. Ada Hegerbeck was coming back from injury, scoring for the first time in 700 days or something crazy like that. So, but what just a crazy story, really, to be fair. Gab, Bertie Auld, one of Celtic's Lisbon Lions, passed away over the weekend. That team made history.
Yeah, it was back in 1967. Obviously, they became the first British team to win a European Cup. They beat the legendary Grande Inter of Helenio Herrera and Mazzola and Burnic and Facchetti, all those guys. But the amazing thing about this team was that everybody who played in that game were born within, I think it's 25 miles, 40-odd kilometers of Celtic Park. And, you know, you think about that, you think about the way the game has evolved today. That's something that I think very safely is one of those records that is, it'll never be broken. Yeah. It'll never be matched again. It's absolutely, absolutely incredible. And just a reminder of how this game has changed. I had the opportunity to speak to a bunch of players who've been involved because every so often there's due to retrospectives. Yeah. Spent time with Billy McNeil, with Tarcisio Burnic. And it's just such an incredible story. Right, that brings us to an end for today. But we got to come back on Thursday, Jules, because there'll be some pretty important verdicts coming up. Yeah. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.